This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I am very, very overjoyed.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, because today, Russell, we are here with the two people. They are actually one artist, but it's two people. But they are basically made the blueprint for what you and I believe in.
Yeah.
Which is that art is for all.
Yes, and me and you are basically two people, but we're one interviewer.
We are one interviewer meeting one artist, and it's such a privilege. And we've been wanting to speak to today's guest for so long.
From day one.
Since day one. Mm. And I realised doing the research for today's episode just how much they've influenced the way I see the world and the way that I love art so much. And I'd kind of maybe not remembered like the impact you'd had on me, weirdly. And then I was really touched, like, doing all the research and looking back at all the amazing works that I used to see here at White Cube back when I first used to see shows in London, and also South London Gallery, and like all these amazing places.
So I remember I had a poster of Dirty Words pictures that was signed by these artists on my wall, which I loved. Well, we would like to welcome to Talk Art
Gilbert and George. Hi, guys. Hi. How are you?
Very well, extremely well.
We find you at White Cube Mason's Yard, and we are here for your new show, New Normal Pictures. All the works are from 2020.
Started before 2019.
But completed in 2020.
Completed. Take 1.5 years to make.
Right. So you, and the date is the completion date. Are any of them 2019?
No, because we only sign them when they are finished.
Got it. So how?
First we are doing designs, then we do the one-to-one, and then we sign it.
Then you sign it.
It's like the old artist. You design, you make sketches, you make the what they call a small sketch, then you make the one-to-one picture. And that's what we do. We always have done that.
It's a phenomenal body of work. It's kind of mind-blowing. And it's not all of the whole show. This is just a quarter of what we're seeing here, but we're seeing a monumental body of work, right?
We're very, very proud. This is probably the biggest showing of the three shows of the New Normal Pictures. The other ones will be in Paris later this year and in New York.
In September in New York, and that's quite a big one as well. And at the same time, we just opened a big show now in Frankfurt that is a kind of 21st century
pictures.
So getting this much work together, has this been exhausting?
No, we are hungry for more. Knowing every day, this morning we designed a show that goes to not Tasmania, but what's in other
New Zealand.
New Zealand.
They've been asking us in Auckland for many, many years if finally we're going to do that.
But it's quite exciting because there is no problem whatsoever. We have so much work that we can choose. We can do whatever we want.
So, and you work every day?
Of course.
Roughly every day.
Not that we think it's work anyway.
It's not work, but there is a different...
We wouldn't call it work.
What would you call it?
It's based on different stages, no? We do the stage where we are taking the images. And that's what are we looking for? What inspires us when we open the door of Fournier Street? That's it. What is in front of us? Not art, but life. And we take images maybe for 6 or 7 months, and we categorize it in subjects. We have big books with contact sheets, and we open all the catalog contact sheets books and put them out on many different tables. And what inspired us that day, we do a picture from those pictures.
Would you say you were documentarists in some way?
Not for one second, no. We think we're not showing life or reflecting life. We're trying to form our tomorrows. We think the world is an entirely different place from 1967 when we left St. Martin's. London was different. The whole world was different. We are all different. Yeah. And the world has changed enormously. And we believe we played a small part in that, and we want to take it forward. We're great believers in the force of culture of Western civilization, the triumph. We're safe and free. And there are many, many countries and territories where you're not safe and free.
Yeah, correct.
We're very, very privileged, spoilt brats, and we should all realise that. And it was because of culture. The church didn't do it. The government didn't come up with new ideas. They didn't invent the permissive society. People invented that, right?
Yeah.
But writers, musicians, artists.
But we are trying to make, when you say, we are trying to make a picture that is inside our head. It's not the real one that is outside. It's how we feel inside. No? That is life for us. How we feel, only inside. No? The pain or the how we happy, unhappy, religiosity or what they call, or too much of this, too much of sin, too much of good or whatever it is inside. But it's not a visual, completely like taking an image. We are inventing the inside and putting it on the wall.
The interior dialogue.
Yeah.
It's how we are. You will write different poems when you're 15 from the poems you'll write when you're 25.
Correct.
And it's how we are, how we think, how we feel, how we hope, how we dread, how we fear, all of those, how we were brought up, all the things we did before, accumulative. That has to be lifted out from inside ourselves onto the picture. We can't see them in the sky. They're new. You can't get a poem out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It has to be dragged out from inside of yourself.
Yeah.
But it started all in 1967 and 68 when we created the idea that we were the art.
Mm-hmm.
We invented the living sculpture, and the journey started. And the journey is interesting for us. The journey, everyday journey towards the end. No? We call it the pilgrim's progress. But that is exactly what are we confronted? Oh, too much drinking, too much happiness, too much sky, too much religion, too much nationalism. So all these subjects are in front of us, and we are producing them and shoot them on the walls. That is our journey through life. It is extraordinary that. That's why we can never run out of ideas, because the journey is always different. What we think and what we feel is day-to-day different.
Right. I think I've always been really inspired by the kind of the whole human, you know, is presented. The whole of each of you, or you know, the combined two of you, is present in the art. And it's actually quite unusual, that, because that, you might describe it as honesty, but you might just describe it almost as factual, because it's this complete experience of humanity that I think is missing in so much of society. Like, there's so many rules and regulations and society codes and all this stuff, but like, what I love about what you do is the way you'll include like every single part of us, whether that be from like the shit you know, to the love, to the passion.
Obviously your first choice.
Always.
We say it's a kind of letter writing, because we always said that when we did the big show in China, and we had a press conference, and they had a translator there, and they wanted us to say, what is a picture? They didn't get it, except what is a modern picture? It wasn't the normal thing, yeah? And so we had to keep it simple. We said, each of our pictures is a visual love letter from us to the viewer. And they all stood up and clapped for half an hour. Amazing. And they are, in fact, they are. It's a letter.
Yeah.
We say, if you're in a museum with someone, and you see a Van Gogh, and you say, oh, come and look at it. You don't say, come and look at this tree and a bit of grass. You say, come and look at the Van Gogh, because you know it's him speaking to you from the grave. Yeah.
And I think because it's personal, our art is totally personal. In that moment, it becomes global.
Yes.
If it is very personal, then all can read it. Everybody's able to read it. And we have invented a language to be what they call our pictures. We invented a form how to make pictures. It's our visual language, and it's very modern in some way.
Yeah.
Very clear, and you can put in a matchbox. It reads perfect. It's very good. It's modern.
Yeah, but it is very universal, your language, and yet all of your work centres around East London. But yet it has this universality that everybody can
relate. It is universal. The universe is in East London. We do believe that. We have been saying it for 50 years. Yeah. Normally we used to say Liverpool Street Station.
We used to say if a spaceship is approaching planet Earth and they say, you've only got 5 minutes to film, they want a typical planet Earth place, they've heard of Zurich. They say, didn't go there. Go to Liverpool Street Station.
You'll get everything you need there.
Where we are is it, anyway? I mean, we live in a French street built on a Roman cemetery. We have a Anglican church at one end of the street. We have a mosque at the other end. It was a Huguenot church before that. John Wesley, the daughter of Karl Marx, Annie Besant, all lectured in that district. On Brick Lane, there's the address where Oscar Wilde went for when he wanted opium. There was a Russian vapor bath, huge Russian vapor bath on Brick Lane until 1910.
What's a vapor bath, like a spa?
A sauna club, yeah.
A sauna club, right. Have they got a plaque for where Oscar...
No.
What? No, no. Got that. You know where that is.
We found out, yeah.
So what are you hoping for? Like you... And you're very open about where you live. I mean, a lot of your works up to recently had your phone number on and your address.
We started in 69. Yeah. Telephone number because we wanted to be famous.
You did want to be famous?
Of course.
What was that? What is it about fame that you guys wanted?
We wanted to... That's another story, like the Chinese one. They showed our film, The World of Gilbert and George, last year in a small foundation in Italy, and we had to go down for it, and then they surprised us by saying there's questions afterwards. We had to do some questions, and all the questions, it was young people and old people, they'd all seen the film, and they wanted to know what it was, what is an artist. So we said, you go to art college and train, you find it. But they didn't mean that. They want to know what it is, and it's very very difficult to explain that. Like all things that mean something, it's very complicated and very simple at the same time. So every next question, pursuing this subject, they were dying to know. And we had to, we had to think quick, and we said, we do it because we want to win and be loved. And they all stood up and clapped.
We got a lot of these stories.
Men, women and children.
And it's very funny because we showed The World of Gilbert and George, a film that we did in 1980 and was done by the Oscars, and they got rid of it. And we found it in America, and we digitalized it to putting up to date. It's amazing.
David Rabilliard is briefly in that.
He's the angry young man.
Have you? Yes. And, you saw that film. It's extraordinary.
Andrew's the young man. Yeah.
Because we used to go out in the street and phone the street and call these boys in and ask them about this global, what it feels being alive. And what, amazing.
So what are you hoping for when you open your door? Because you said hope is like a medium in your practice. When you open your door every morning and you're capturing the world around you, what is...
We're not capturing the world. It's not. We're just stepping out you're stepping out into the world, and and your feet go down, and you know that whether you like it or not, all of the rest is all around. It's a great big sphere.
Yeah.
And you're walking on it, whether you think that or feel that, you are, yeah?
Are you constantly alert?
Yes, George, more than me.
No, I didn't.
But are you constantly alert in East London, and then when you leave East London, like we're in West London now, you can relax, because this isn't the place you're capturing?
No, we are not uptown girls, I tell you that.
So you're less like analytical, because I always see it as some kind of like, almost like you're archaeologist or something, like going around, you know, because if you look at the work downstairs, for example, I know this is a common thread in your work, but you have all these little graffiti kind of texts that people have written on walls, or these kind of very subtle, small, but very personal, intimate kind of moments that someone scribbled a little message. And then you've kind of put a spotlight on that.
So it's like visiting Egypt and seeing the Sphinx and the pyramid, but
hieroglyphics.
No, it's the same thing anyway. What were they thinking then? What are they thinking now?
In some ways, we expressing ourselves being alive. That's what it is. The journey is, an artist is roughly is that. Feeling what they call expressing himself being alive. You know? And then, like recently, we realized that we started, instead of looking up in the sky, we started to look down, and a new world arrived there. Like all these new pictures, you know? It's looking down. on the pavement and walking, because we are getting older, so the walking a little slower, so we start to see a new world there. And it is like a super tramps walking to the end of, to the end. We always liked the idea of tramps. You know, we started out with the, but underneath the arches, the two tramps, and we never went away from that in some way. It's still walking, the tramps are still walking.
What is that? Because you feel like that's the authentic
Because
life
we were here. Outsiders always.
We were surrounded by tramps. We only moved to Forney Street because it was the only place we could afford. And it was, we were surrounded by, there were three hostels for men and one for women. Yeah? And there were thousands of men, a lot damaged by the First World War, many damaged by the Second World War, and quite a big percentage damaged by the sex laws. Yeah?
Right.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
That is, went down and down and down. Yeah? But that's extraordinary. That's why when we left college, we didn't apply for a Gulbenkian grant, because two people never apply for a grant, right? And you can't go for a subsidised studio again, because it was only 1 year out of decriminalisation, for fuck's sake. Yeah?
And not even teaching.
Well, that's the year you met, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't even get a teaching job as two people. Yeah? Mm. But we did wander London, and as we said earlier, we believe in the triumph. Yeah? So you walk through London, you see all these big railway stations, yes? Victoria, Waterloo, King's Cross, and all the tube stations, the names of the tube stations, Baker Street, and the shops, and the offices, and the clubs, and the police stations, and the palaces, and the prisons. It's an extraordinary achievement, no? And that's true. That is true all over the world, where you are free and safe. Yeah?
Right, yeah.
And but that's the triumph. That's what we want to maintain and advance it, no?
But I remember that all the tramps were living in the basement of the church, in Christchurch, Spitalfields, and they had this enormous fire outside there. There were two fires, one near the market and one just in front of the church there. And they used to, call one Van Gogh. He always followed us. He had a shaven head.
He looked
and, and he was after us all the time with big stones. He was chucking at us all the time, completely mad, but in some way all friendly. The next second, all friendly. And we still have that. We have them now, here, all the time. I mean, the biggest friend, one became the biggest friend of ours, George, the other George, for the last 20 years, you know, has been sitting in front of our door every single day, except not the last 6 months, but...
Is he in one of the works downstairs? Because I noticed the big work in the...
Number 12.
And George would give him two quid a day to buy cider and instant coffee the whole day.
Right. It's interesting thinking about the idea of like social change. If you think of the amount of developments, even just in the UK, that have happened in your career, you know, from the beginning of you guys being students until now.
The world, the changing world.
Yeah, well, the whole world, yeah. But if you think about just the UK, say, like if you think about like gay rights, all of these kind of, you know, things that have progressed, but also how little things have changed in other ways. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think the importance of art to highlight, you know, social issues and to bring about change, because like you say, it is art that brings about change, really.
Yeah.
We're not actually advocating anything. We're just providing the opportunity for people to decide for themselves.
Yes.
We think we're doing what they did in the 19th century, thought transference. They did it on stage. You know, they ask for somebody's fountain pen and they tell their life story and everything. We think we're doing that as artists in a way.
Okay.
You know, we the images and the things in the pictures give thoughts to people they'll take home and maybe discuss, maybe not, maybe think about, maybe forget. And that it is a sort of thought transference.
It's kind of liberalizing ourselves in many different ways, no? That what we have been doing, seeing the world in a different way, and it has changed in an extraordinary way from when we started art. And when we started to do these artworks like Queer and all this stuff, it was nearly trying to take it down the wall, non-stop. But we always had this, what you call, battle. But we always succeeded, no? They always tried to take the pictures off the wall, but they never actually did.
Yeah. Well, it feels like you've always skirted around or, like, jumped into outrage and taboo. You've always felt like you've never been fearful of that.
Not that it is, only that people say that, yeah?
Yeah.
People say, you know, why shit or why... You know. The manufacturers of lavatory bands are not there giggling in the factory, right?
No,
the manufacturers of lavatory paper are not all giggling. Right?
So, like this is going to wipe someone's bum.
But we were even amazed because we were so impressed by this huge population of these tramps and damaged people. And we realised that they're nearly all Scottish or Irish. Yeah? They were.
The English go to New York.
Because when we went to New York the first time,
all English.
We said, where's the rough district around it? They said, you go down the Bowery. And we went into a bar where they only drank sherry, sort of not sherry from Europe, but some concoction. And they were English. Sailors who jumped ship or got disgraced or something. So it is universal in that way. Yeah?
Yes. Yeah.
That's why the Salvation Army is one of the biggest charities in the world. And they have a place in every port. Yeah.
Yes.
The biggest citadel is in New York. Yeah. Even when it was founded in the East End. The first outdoor sermon by Booth was in the little park at the end of our street, Valence Road.
All the socialists were there.
Out of doors.
The daughter of Karl Marx, all there, preaching non-stop.
Social reformers was all around us. Toynbee of Toynbee Hall, all
what about the vicar, George, of Oscar Wilde?
Yeah, what's he called again? There was a fantastic vicar. I've just got the book about him. Can't think. But he was the only person who turned up at the gates of the prison.
Reading Jail? Really? For Oscar Wilde?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he liked what did he say about girls?
He was very keen on the theatre because he thought it was good for the soul, and most vicars thought it was a sort of dodgy stuff. Yeah, not so.
But you guys love the theatre, right? You go quite regularly.
We have a friend who takes us there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Our big friend of ours in Manchester who knows all about theatre, and he takes us. But we would never go.
But the vicar was on the side of the theatre. That was one of the reasons why he supported Oscar Wilde, because he thought he was a playwright, yeah? Very liberal idea. Yeah? But he said that it was very important that the performers show their legs.
The vicar said this?
Yeah. Because, of course...
Right.
Because we're God's creatures, right? That's why.
Right.
Because everybody hid their legs. That's why they invented the can-can, to try to show something of the human body, right? Even they had all big long knickers on.
Yeah,
yes. He thought the performers should show their legs, yeah? And he turned up at the jail for Wilde.
Wow.
There's a story about this man. There's a movie there, surely.
Yeah,
Have you ever...
His church is just around the corner from us, again.
It's in Bethnal Green.
Just around the corner.
Wow.
2 minutes walk.
Wow.
We're also 2 minutes walk from the tomb of
William Blake.
Yeah.
And Love.
And Daniel Defoe.
Yeah, over the road.
And the most famous least read book, Pilgrim's Progress, John Bunyan is buried there.
Yeah.
Only one gets flowers, albeit in a jam jar.
William Blake.
Yeah, we are fascinated by William Blake. It's just what you call the floating, this brain that is all floating above you. Don't you think you never know where it is? It's not down to earth in a way at all. It's just extraordinary.
But you guys are quite spiritual, even though you're not religious, there is something in your belief in destiny, especially when it comes to the two of you meeting each other and the life you've lived.
That's why we say ban religion. Yeah.
Ban religion, but believe in destiny, or believe in fate, or...
We believe in the moral dimension.
The
moral dimension, we always have been... We invented this moral dimension for ourselves, what is good and what is bad, and that changes every single day. But that our art is a moral dimension. We always said that.
We're not this. This is not what we are.
We are not abstract. We're not cubists. We're not that. We are the human art with a moral dimension. The human person is there all the time.
What we are is a great invention. This is a
frail figures invention. And committing sins and whatever we do, but anyways, we are human.
Is this just, you talking about yourselves, frail figures committing sins, or are you talking about the human?
No, ourselves. Only yourselves. The two of us.
What are the sins you're committing?
We did, but we wouldn't tell you.
Do you ever feel, you were talking about this homeless guy who was wanting to like throw a rock at your head 1 second and then not, and you have people that regularly
Van Gogh.
Have you ever felt scared or threatened? Because it feels like whenever I've read these stories that you've gone through, they're always told with a kind of twinkle in your eye, like it's all fine.
But it is all fine.
I think we got away
with murder ourselves. Don't you think?
I just feel like, have you ever felt vulnerable or scared of these kind of people?
I remember when we went to the Blitz pub, the club.
The Blitz club, yeah.
In the 1980s.
Blitz Kids.
No, there was not in 1980, it was in 78 or 79, we went in there.
Yeah.
And it was 19... 77, because we just had a show in what do you call
the Mental Pictures.
The Mental Pictures, and we had a small party at the club, and we were eating and stuff. And then we saw this big group of East Enders, you know, shaven heads and girls and all the stuff. And we started to talk to them, and they were offended in many ways.
They were that sad phenomenon at that time of young people from the East End and who wanted to be in there with this thing they heard about, yeah, but didn't know how to do it. So they would travel into the Blitz in Great Queen Street near Holborn, and they just in the end get very frustrated because they really didn't agree. They wanted it, but they didn't want it. Do you know what I mean?
And so the problem is that what they call George, what they call, they got quite irritated and full of other stuff. And when George left, and they came over and beat me up.
They did?
Oh, yeah, the big...
A bottle over his head. Yeah.
So you're laughing now, but at the time, was you scared?
Not the first time.
So you've been bottled before that?
Oh, yes. Another group in Finsbury Park. I remember I was in hospital around a quarter for a week or something.
But that is a twinkle. Yeah. It's like, this is quite a lot of trauma, but does it, as living sculptures, as artists, do you feel like these things happen as research for your work? Where does the work end and like...
It's part of life, that, isn't it? We went to the cinema in
Finsbury Park.
I think it's the revived it now as a cinema. We came out late. We'd seen an amazing horror film with Vincent Price. Mm. And we wanted to have a drink in the pub before taking the tube back. Mm. And some young man stopped us going in. Yeah. And I said, you can't do that. It's not a club. And you have to let me in. I sort of made a... sort of Devonian, upper-class twitty.
What do you mean?
And they're obviously very angry, and they wouldn't let us in. And we walked away, and we came under that big tunnel there, that big...
The big bridge.
And halfway down, we heard running, and we turned, and there were two youths running at amazing speed. They leapt into the air, it was no trick, and then landed on top of you and beat us up. And anyway, then ambulance came, took us in, and the good thing is that the... chap in the back of the ambulance says, he was concussed, it was concussed. And he said, can you describe the evening so far to the patient? Because you have to start the thing working. Huh? What happened, where you have dinner and everything. And I started to describe the film that we just seen. I thought, that's the most recent thing. And then I realised the poor chap was listening to this horror story of
Wyndham
Price, the count coming down with the axe to the castle.
Christopher Lee with red eyes coming down the thing.
But was you scared at that point?
We went to...
No.
It feels like you have no fear.
It was very good. We went to the big hospital in Holloway, and it was at a time when visiting hours were very strict, and it didn't apply to me. I sat there, they thought I was a policeman, and they thought I was making sure. Amazing.
You two have this incredible kind of bond that because I've never spent much time with you. I've met you briefly here and there, but... it's fascinating to watch. Like, there's a real joy between the two of you, and you seem to have this real sort of vitality and joy of life.
It was an amazing journey.
What a success story the world is.
Like we
all did. Of our young friends who moan, we say, you're crazy. More people go to more countries than ever before. There are more books. Everyone said that the book was going to be finished. No. People said the cinema was going to be finished because nothing's finished. Everything's enormous success. It's out of this world's success.
But for us, it was extraordinary. Like, we were able to do more than 100 public exhibitions.
Wow.
That's extraordinary. Nothing to do...
Not gallery shows. Yeah.
Museums. Yeah. More than 100. It's extraordinary. Yeah, it is.
We come from a generation of people who go to art school, leave art school, get a teaching job and hope maybe at some point there'll be a small exhibition before they die. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
We think the Conservative Party creates artists and the Labour Party creates art teachers.
Right.
Mrs. Thatcher changed all of that, yeah?
Yeah, you're pro-Thatcher, right?
Oh, yes. Capitalism.
She's not here anymore, but yeah.
You're allowed to buy art, no? You're allowed to have money to buy art. If not, you become a teacher of art. And they are many.
Art was completely nationalised in a very dull, horrid way, yeah?
All they did was to
have a grant or a teaching job and go to the West End Gallery to see the successful foreign artists.
Right.
That's how we started.
Yeah. That's no good.
Have you rubbed up against some aggression with your political views, like pro-Brexit?
All the educated middle classes are against Mrs. Thatcher, yeah, of course.
Ah, yeah.
What do you expect?
I mean, we don't talk too much about it because...
Yeah, of course, yeah, yeah.
But, but it's quite amusing to just say the word conservative, then you feel you are worse than a pedophile.
Only this very narrow confine, yeah? Yeah. It's fine with taxi drivers or waiters or anything, yeah?
Yeah.
Just this mad...
And yeah, but you quite like that shock factor.
We want to be on the other side, but then you start to think. No? If not, you are just part of the what to call the big river of nonsense. But if you are on the other side, that's what we are outside the art world, then we see everything much clearer.
No? I feel like you are Anglophiles that live here. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's what I feel like. And also, you are pro-monarchists, and I'd like to know your opinion of... Have you seen the Harry and Meghan...
No, we just say that a democratic country with a monarchy is a very intellectual way to organise the society. It just gives a human element together with the voting system that is unique. It's extraordinary.
Because in the other country... The other country, they have to invent one, no? The president, you know,
like who's Germany. The president of France? Who's the president of
Germany?
Nobody
knows anything. Huh?
They nearly all go to prison in the end, anyway.
It's a kind of
they do.
It's a kind of what you call figurehead, you know, artificial figurehead. It's
someone described the Queen as a living flag.
Yeah, it is.
Have you seen?
It seems a little coarse as a description, but
yeah. Have you seen Harry and Meghan's Oprah interview?
George didn't.
No, we have a very. I was brought up proudly lower class, that it's very bad form to gossip about the royal family. Mm. Very bad form.
And you
can say the Duke is coming to Exeter next week, but not gossip. Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's quite a good rule.
Yeah.
And Prince Charles always, I like him, what he does, what he behaves, hugging trees and all that stuff. It's fantastic.
And for a long time, you had the royal coat of arms.
At the beginning.
At the very beginning, again, because we wanted to be famous.
Yeah, on your work.
Even on our first books, we had it.
Yeah. And all the letters, they're all stamped with a...
We had newspaper with it on to start with.
Illegal.
We wanted to be established.
We
were poor, lower-class country boys hoping to get through and win.
An art that was not accepted as art.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All what we did at that time was not accepted in art. And so we had to invent everything to make ourselves, what you call, clear and clean and sharp. That's why we put on the, what you used to call the suits?
The responsibility suits of our art.
The responsibility suits of our art.
Not to alienate any section of society.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I read your manifesto, talking about suits, from 1969, which is the core principles of the law of sculptors. And your number one was, always be smartly dressed, well-groomed, relaxed and friendly, polite and in complete control.
We kept to that.
I hope we have.
So, and this manifesto is something that you've stuck to all this time. Number two was, make the world to believe in you and pay heavily for this privilege.
We did that as well.
Number three, never worry, assess, discuss or criticise, but remain quiet, respectful and calm.
I hope we kept that one.
I can't imagine you guys ever getting angry, like even when these people were jumping on your head and bottling you, it feels like you were really polite.
Yeah, but I actually heard you guys say that you shouldn't alienate people and that you would never swear, like yourselves. Is that true? Because in your work you use...
We never swear ourselves.
Swear words.
In the art it's fine.
In the art it's fine, but as people you would never do that. Which
we never swear.
Yeah.
It's only as an artwork. We never swear.
But what is your favourite? Do you have a favourite swear word or a favourite dirty word?
I mean...
No, it's not that... I mean, we did the Dirty Words pictures in 1977.
Mm.
If we'd done them in 67, we'd have nearly gone to prison.
Yeah.
Even the first magazine called Gilbert the Shit and not Josh the Cunt in 71.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. And even what they call like... The
God...
Recently, and that's quite interesting about God.
Yeah,
insulting God or poor God and everything.
Everyone was very angry about that. I read.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought she went to. She showed her knickers dancing.
She became an embarrassment. became an embarrassment to the party. In fact, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess so. But yeah. It was. That was quite a controversial moment. You had people. That was here, wasn't it? You had people picketing, or was it?
No, we never had pickets. No.
Son of a God show, the pictures, that show you're talking about.
Was it in Hoxton?
That's in Hoxton. Yeah. You had people there.
But we would never have, members of the public are never against in that way. It's only somebody from the media. There's a huge gulf between the media and the general public. Eh?
Right.
You can do a thousand shit pictures tomorrow, and the taxi driver will say, "Oh, good on you, mate." Eh? but the new journalists from a slim little magazine, they're all.
What do you call the, not labels, the middle classes, they can be quite, they think they know it all. They think they are it, and that's why we are never part of that. Now, our motto is never have what?
Lasagna? This is a new one. Never have lasagna in other people's houses.
That's a, can we add that to the manifesto? Just one more manifesto.
I think it's because we didn't like the idea of snobbishness. But I must say, I was brought up to believe that the middle classes were the backbone of the country.
Yeah.
That the local chief of police and the shopkeepers and the school teachers, it's part of the British way of life. It's not entirely true, I found out, in adult life. There's a mean streak of middle class life, which can be very unsettling for a lot of people. Mm.
They think they know it all. They think they are right. Everybody thinks...
I don't like to be snobbish, but...
Yeah.
The lower classes are never like that, never. Mm-hmm. They're much more forgiving.
Yes.
Which is important in life.
Absolutely. Well, the last point on the manifesto was, the Lord chisels still,
yes.
So don't leave your bench for long.
We keep to that one.
What does that mean?
The idea of God, you know, he's still manipulating the world every single day.
Sure, anyway.
We are doing that. You know.
The change.
Tsunamis all over the world, can you imagine?
The changes are happening anyway as we speak.
Yeah.
If we didn't do these pictures, nobody else would have done them. Nobody else is running around like twits picking up drug bags to put in the gallery. Right?
Yeah, totally.
And it's even
anyone could have done the Dirty Words pictures. They were all over the streets. Not now. Now it's all artistic street art. But then it was only fuck, shit, titling. That was all it was. Eh? Mm. Anyone could have done it.
Mm. Even the drug bags.
They didn't.
In the drug bags, it's quite interesting because they have been around us for years and years and years. And even on television or like Law and Order in America, they only talk about drugs nonstop. It's amazing. Even today, in Thailand, they're all selling this.
What a subject.
It's such a big subject, nobody mentioned it in art. No? Mm-hmm. And that's why the extraordinary. We don't take drugs. Never took.
We're probably the only people
never took
in art who didn't take it. Yeah? All our art school teachers did, all the students did.
Mm. But it's an amazing modern subject, it is. That's what it is.
You cannot open a local newspaper or a national newspaper without reading about it.
True. That is true.
And it's everything is there. Yes, obviously a great joy and happiness to a lot of people. It's obviously a killer to somebody else. Yeah.
Mm. You used to be big drinkers, though, didn't you? That's played a lot.
The drug bags reminded me when I was at Oxford as an art student. There was an American satirical songwriter called Tom Lehrer.
Right, I don't know
who everybody knew, mm-hmm. and. They were very witty. He wrote a song called The Vatican Rag, and then he wrote one called The Old Dope Peddler. And I learnt it at Oxford and completely forgot it. And because of doing these pictures, it all came back to me. Wow. And it's very simple. Every evening after sundown comes the fellow everyone knows. It's the old dope peddler, spreading joy wherever he goes. He gives the kids free samples because he knows full well that today's young innocent faces will be tomorrow's clientele. So here's a cure for all your troubles. Here's an end to all distress. It's the old dope peddler with his powdered happiness. It's a good song, isn't it?
That's very catchy.
Yeah. One that actually makes me ask a question, though, because your minds seem to be so encyclopedic, and you seem to, and I don't know whether you kind of help each other because there's two of you to be this stronger brain, but somehow your memory is like unbelievable. Is that just because you're constantly keeping yourself questioning and curious? And like, what do you think the secret of that is?
We're supposed to be losing our memories as you get older, no?
I know, but you don't seem to be, do you? I think
you retain more.
I need to get whatever the secret is.
I mean, we remember quite a lot, yes.
Yeah.
Down to every single detail, what part of our life, not outside, but our life we remember. Mm. Every single Well, how George picked me up.
How did he pick you up?
Tell us that story.
Steady now, steady now.
No, we love it.
This, in you two, well, you two met the year homosexuality was decriminalised, right?
77.
Not that that mattered to us, I didn't think, because we thought that we were in the centre of the universe.
Yeah.
First of all, we were in London and Britain, that it was the age of anything goes. Everyone said that. The other one was free love. Everyone said free love. Everyone was talking about the permissive society. We were in the Charing Cross Road. Christ almighty.
Soho.
Soho there, and police cars. Every 30 seconds, there was a police car whizzing by. And there were film crews from countries that we'd never visited filming at St. Martin's School of Art, you know, this modern...
Famous school. That's why I went there.
It was
so famous. Global famous. Well, I was in Munich, you know, studying art, and then I saw this, what do you call this, exhibition of new generation sculptors, you know, Caro, Tucker, King, and all the stuff. Mm. And I was impressed. I thought, I have to leave this old-fashioned, what do you call, German city and move where it's happening. Like, let's say, like, full of artists did that, no? The Romanian one, what is it called? He walked from Romania to Paris.
Gorjabretska.
No, Gorjabretska. No, the other one, what is it called? The famous one. After, anyways. And so I managed to get in St. Martin's School of Art. It was an extraordinary idea, no? They went through some photograph of mine and they said yes. It was extraordinary.
Wow.
Philip King said yes.
Wow. Philip King was the main man at St. Martin's.
I think he said yes. The man who said yes. We always have people who said yes. We realize that in all our lives is based on some people say yes. The other ones are not important. Like the first time the German gallery, Conrad Fischer, said to us, yes, that was it. And then Ileana Sonderben in New York said yes, that was it. No? It's very simple.
Nobody else would say yes. They were the only two people alive at that moment who would say yes. No one else knew who we were or what we were.
Was that feel like
good.
A relief at the time?
These were people who knew enough of themselves but to recognise something in us.
The first time that we became known was when we did this postal sculptures, no? And we did in the message of the sculptors, it was called, no? Like cigarette ash and makeup powder and the little story about how we behave.
Postal art, yeah.
Yeah, and we send it out to 300 people, and we got the address from Conrad Fischer in Düsseldorf, and we send it off internationally. Overnight, we are famous. Overnight, because they were so beautiful done, so perfect, all handmade, no? From America to Australia to Japan, all we had full of contact. Overnight, we were famous. And with that thing, with a postal sculpture.
It's a really nice thing for young artists today to consider doing something like that. Because post art like Onkawari and Ray Johnson, there was a lot of people that made it immediately.
Well, actually, we've been getting quite a lot sent to us, to the gallery, to my gallery, from artists and different people reaching out. It's a really touching
thing. We were just filled with the horror that a lot of artists had at that time. And still have. We still meet young people. They say, I do what I do. I go to my studio every day. And somebody's going to come. They never will.
We never thought
of
that.
Will.
We went out.
No one
there.
Will come.
We went to all the galleries in London. They all said.
They
no.
all said no. We went to. We were totally. We went to everyone, whether we would like to show there or not. Strange ones that weren't exactly galleries in Knightsbridge. They were on the gallery list, so we went. They all said no.
There is only one that said yes. We asked one gallery to show the Shit and Cunt for one afternoon at the Robert Fraser Gallery, and he said yes.
And I thought it was like a 5-minute, it felt like the longest yes in the
longest
world.
Longest yes you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And what's the name? There was a filmmaker who actually filmed it, these three or four people coming in to see it.
Wow.
This is the Shit and What show?
Shit and Cunt.
It was a magazine sculpture. Good with Shit and George the Cunt.
Yes, right.
In a little cabinet, yeah.
And with the Conrad Fischer show, I loved that show, and it was a kind of quite important show for you, you know, because it gave you this idea to sort of leave things behind.
He introduced us, he set it up all over Germany that we were able to do the scene sculpture.
Yes.
And in other European. Yes.
And in Düsseldorf, in Nuremberg, in Berlin.
Tell
all
us what the scene sculpture is for people that wouldn't know.
It's all because of the tramps, really, because of where we were, yeah? And because we didn't want to do what everybody else, all the other students did. So when we left St Martin's, we didn't try to make some chisely sculptures. We didn't want. We knew we were artists anyway. We knew we had it in us. Mm. Yeah. Mm. We still had nothing. Yeah? We didn't have any money. We didn't have a space or anything. But it was through seeing London, like I said earlier, you see the cathedral and you see the prison and you see all this stuff. And wandering through London, and we came across that little estate. We know a young man who lives there now. It's like a utopian estate near Euston. Chorlton Street is called, I think.
Right, yeah.
And it's sort of 20s, beautiful buildings. And we were very impressed. And there are poles in the garden with great big birds commissioned by Royal Doulton to decorate the garden. Everyone is different, huge birds. They're nearly all stolen now, and occasionally they come onto the market. And we were amazed by that. It's extraordinary, these people living in these flats. And then at the front, there was a laundrette, off-license, something else. And there was a second-hand shop. And you could see immediately that the shop, because of where it was in London, it just had the things that the people in those flats left when they moved out.
Oh, right.
You know, the lampshade with the donkey on or something, yeah? The last year's telephone book. Or it was just a huge shop full of human detritus that nobody, they hardly ever saw. And we went in, it had this amazing junk shop smell. And then we found this pile of records, and one was called Underneath the Arches. And we thought, we know what that is, yeah? That's exactly where we live, yeah?
Right.
And we took the record home.
And we found
We found somebody who had the record, and we realised that the words were exactly what we were thinking, because we had no, we were very idealistic, we had high hopes, but we didn't have anything. Yeah,
yeah.
It was trying to be cheerful though, against all the odds. Mm. Yeah, and it says the writs we never sigh for, the Carlton you can keep. There's only one place that I know, and that is where I sleep. Underneath the arches, I dream my dreams away. Underneath the arches, on cobblestones we lay. Every night you'll find me, tired out and worn, happy when the daylight comes creeping, heralding the dawn. Sleeping when it's raining, and sleeping when it's fine. La di 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 da 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 da. Pavement is my pillow, no matter where we stray. Underneath the arches, I dream my dreams away. Then we got it.
Now you need to stand. Got it. Now you need us to clap stand.
Could you see that we got it?
And then
it was all there.
Yeah,
then right in front of us.
Then we
everything.
Then we started
the jolliest, saddest, most fantastic thing. Yeah, against all the odds, these two chaps
in the studio. We started to dance with it, no, with a stick, not. And then we realized, oh, we could do this in the art schools.
This is an artwork, as it's full of everything that we've ever thought about.
So we took it to all the art schools, not all the Royal Academy, St Martin's School, Camberwell School of Art, Slade School of Art, on a small table, we would go up and...
They gave us a lecture fee for doing it. Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah. It was a way to do it. And then the greatest moment was when we did it at St. Martin's, which had turned against us when we'd left anyway. But we said we would like to do the singing sculpture. They sort of agreed to it. And we wanted to do it in the Assembly Hall there's a big place there.
Yeah.
And we'd seen Friday afternoon events at St. Martin's, famous artists come to talk, or
Richard Hamilton.
But it was always like three students, and nobody knew it was on. It was always badly arranged, and we always thought they're so stupid. Yeah. So we did an amazing campaign.
For
our Friday event coming up. We had badges with our blood on.
Come to see our new sculpture all the time. And day and night we were advertising.
For so 1 week.
When it happened, the whole room was full. All the teachers there.
All the people from the design and the fashion, they were all there as well. Yeah.
So you made a whole like marketing campaign, essentially. Yeah. You were like promoting
it. And that time, we only did it once. We did it twice, the song, and then down again.
Very brief.
Without a makeup. Mm. That came later. And
But then the best thing that could ever happen within that situation happened, which was that in the middle of the sculpture, the head of sculpture, who was called Frank Martin, everyone in the room knew what he looks like, yeah, got up and stomped out.
Oh, wow.
And everyone turned.
That was it.
They knew we were right.
Yeah.
Got it?
The revolution was on.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they know we're right? Why be enraged? Mm-hmm. Why stomping? Famous framework, ex-desert rats. Christ almighty, he was. Hero of the Second World War.
So that was a good feeling you had? That
yeah,
a
very
like,
good
won,
feeling.
But
it was amazing sign.
So the
amazing
next
you knew you were doing the right
winning.
Thing.
Amazing sign.
So the next good feeling, when we started to put the makeup on, the multicolored
like
bronzes
and
all that stuff.
Yeah.
And we did, I think, that one the first time nearly in the Hyde Park, walk. You know, this famous Mick Jagger, this
Rolling Stones concert.
Rolling Stones concert. We did a big walk around it. It was amazing. All the multicolored hats on, and they all stopped us. It was amazing. Like religious people, they saw it.
Strangely, looking back, we didn't go anywhere near the stage. We only went for the audience, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We weren't dart to go and gawp at some pop stars. Huh? We wanted something. We wanted to succeed to get through. Yeah? And they all asked us extraordinary questions, like we would know. Extraordinary.
Sexual.
Sexual questions.
A lot of
all masturbate underneath some blankets and all the stuff.
A lot of boys or men were sitting down with their knees up. They were wearing. You don't know what a kaftan is, do you?
Yeah.
They had kaftan, and they were wanking off underneath.
You two were walking past?
Yeah, of course.
Not because they were being dirty, not because they were being disgusting, because it's free love and it's...
Everything is
allowed. Anything goes.
A lot of sexual activity around.
It wasn't a meeting open. And so we had the multicolored head. Then Conrad Fischer asked her to do the living sculpture in Düsseldorf, and we went there and... We make the decision to do it for 8 hours nonstop.
That's right.
For the first time.
That's the opening hours. The opening hours.
A trance. I mean, that must
have been extraordinarily good.
No, you're very conscious.
They stayed there for 8 hours, not moving in front of us.
They're in a trance, if anybody.
And you just both just looping the song.
No, we went one song. Then one has to go down to switch on the. What do you call the record again?
Rewind.
And George has the stick on. And then I will go up, and George gives me the stick, and he goes down to put the record on again. So up and down the whole day for 8 hours.
Wow!
But you perform this thing like your mannequins, like your dolls.
And yes, we kept it very formal.
Not that very emotional. We could do it. No, we were not dull. We were expressing amazing emotional through the song. No, completely looking up the sky. They all dreamt about it. And then we took it to New York for 2 weeks nonstop, 8 hours a day. It was just extraordinary.
When was the last time you did it?
Well, right now.
We did it. We did it in France, in Bordeaux. I remember for the anniversary of Jean-Louis Formeau had this famous museum with full of art, and he wanted us to do it. We did it for, I think, one day or something.
When was that?
I must have been 99 or something.
Would you do it again now? Is it something you consider?
Who knows? But the extraordinary thing is that how we felt, it's true. There's nothing that it didn't mean to somebody. Huh? You know, there were kids completely fascinating, and they wanted to travel with us to the next. They asked their parents, they could turn the handle. And there were women crying because they remember something about their father or something.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
It's interesting, but the idea of the present moment and how present you are in it. Because, A, you obviously believed in it so much, which is why the work was created, because you had that very visceral connection to that work and to the words. But also this kind of very present connection to the audience or something. It's fascinating.
I think people feel... We were brought up with an ideology that the artist felt superior to the viewers. They felt that they do their strange art and people out there will never understand it except maybe some special people. Mm. And we disliked that idea at St. Martin's very much, this superior attitude. And we thought, why would you not want to do an art that reaches anybody, whoever they are?
Yes.
Like if you invent something for medical, you would want it that everyone can have the cure.
Yes, of course.
Not that it's only for this or that. Or why would you write a book that nobody can get past page 3? What a daft idea. Mm. Yeah. That you have to have a human content that, whether you're old or young or come from Africa or Sydney, you can still be able to get something from it. Yeah? And that actually worked.
It was a kind of art for all. But after that, we felt we have to leave something behind.
Yes.
That's why we invented... First, we invented the so-called photo piece, we call it that. Now we call them pictures. No? Uh-huh. And so all of a sudden, like drinking, no? Let's do drinking pieces, no? It's quite a modern idea to do. That's what we are, no? We are totally human and we drink too much. Make art about that.
No? So a Western ideal.
Yeah. And then we did the cherry blossoms. We went to Japan and we were so fascinated by the cherry blossom trees, no? So we did this new... us in the cherry blossom, no? Because that meant you are the first one to fight, no? The cherry blossom is the first to come up and then the first one to disappear.
First one to die.
Like blossom a modern, modern fighter. No? That's what we felt we were at that time.
Right.
Then we did a mental Rebels. When we thought, no, we did the mental...
Mental?
The mental, yeah. Like we were nearly going mental, so we did that.
Well, I feel like if you're living sculptures, like you talked about, there's a work I love called Spit on Shit, which is literally a big gob of spit dripping onto a shit. Now, as living...
95.
Say again?
It was 1995.
95, yes. So as like living sculptors... Whatever comes out of your body is art, if you are living as art. So why shouldn't you access things as...
As it is for the viewer who's looking at that picture.
Yeah. That is your shit, though, is it?
Yes.
How do you get that? How do you photograph your shit?
You have a good story about that, Georgia. They all ask us.
When we went to the...
South London show.
The press view. There were so many journalists, because everybody feels... They all wanted every silly magazine turned up for that, yeah? And the most common question was, where do you get them from, yeah? And then I got so sick of it, everyone that came away said, Harrods.
How do you collect it? I tell you a net that you catch?
Yeah, go down in the morning, have a jobby.
Yeah.
Put it on a piece of cardboard, take it into the studio, where we have a special arrangement.
To put it on, and we take the images.
Like a little plinth for it.
Yes, but we take all our
images. Like if you go into a studio to have your image taken, no?
Yes.
Exciting, because all the images in our art are taken by us.
Yes.
No assistance.
With a camera, like an SLR, digital, or...
Digital, Nikon cameras.
Digital, right.
But we always took the images ourselves, every single one, because a lot of artists had assistance. We never had that.
So how do you set these up? Like the
ones it's still not done with... We have to point that out, but it's still not done with the camera.
Oh.
No, because it's not a photograph. You take negatives. Is that what you mean?
What I was going to say, we say that as well. It's another way out. But the other way is we say we do it with our heads, our souls, and our sex.
Ah.
There are thousands and millions of cameras. They didn't take shit and spit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If somebody else does it.
Yeah.
A very good story about that. What was the picture again?
Spit on shit.
Yeah. So the most famous Phoenician collector went into our New York gallery some years ago now and said... I don't know why, but I want to buy something. I don't know what I want to buy. Tell me what I should buy that I want to be, you to tell, he never did. He said, you tell me what to buy.
Yeah.
And the dealer said, come and have a look at this. And he bought that. And it's been, yes, been there.
And they eat by his dinner table, isn't it? Apparently, don't they eat by it and stuff? So that the family eat by this.
It's by his family dinner table.
It is in Venice, in fact, I think that piece, yes.
But I also like that idea, because I've heard you, as I was talking about that negative, so it's the negative that's been taken, not the photograph.
Technically,
But also this idea of against the artist's hand. So if you think of these, like, very precious paintings that are, like, you know, you get to see the expression of their hand. Like, the way that you guys create art is very removed that.
Which the hand is removed, yes. But it is still based, like, let's say, Renaissance art with layers.
Right.
It's not an image. There are layers, one, two, three, hundreds of layers in our pictures.
Just because, a sculpture.
Yeah, because like, you have the lantern, you have the figure, the boy, the leaf, and all the stuff, all layers. And then we are manipulating every layer. Every eye is manipulated. It's extraordinary to make it in some way artificial. Our vision that is inside has to be more important than what it is normally. That's why we're creating, and it's all done by ourselves. That's quite interesting. Like, we take, before doing a group of pictures, maybe now we take like 5,000 shots.
Wow.
And we are laying them, we have what they call contact sheets, and we have all these books that we open up and see what is speaking to us. It's all about what is speaking to us.
Yeah. No?
What is the morality of today that we feel something?
Yeah. On a practical level, are you using computers and Photoshop?
Yes. 20 years.
Because these new works downstairs, they feel so contemporary in the sense of that.
Yeah, like, done by us.
Futuristic kind of...
But mind you, 5 years before we moved on to computers, all the young kids said, which computer are you using?
Right.
They all assumed we were. Because the language is the same, in fact.
Photoshop.
It's a similar idea.
It's very simple. Like, we had this big enlarger, the projector.
Horizontal.
Horizontal enlarger. And then Ilford went out of business. Mm. We couldn't buy paper anymore.
The film, the paper, yeah.
And that was his finish. Then somebody introduced it to a computer. We learned it very fast. It's very funny because we didn't know. We never touched a computer, no? So we went to see people, and they would charge £1,000 a day to train it. And then we started to be very fast ourselves.
Yeah, I bet. You were like, we're going to get this down in one day.
Quick learners then.
We are learning that we are able to do it ourselves, totally. Yeah. We have an assistant who is doing the emails for us that we don't touch.
Yui Gang.
And he's printing out our images. But the art, what is this art, it has always been done by us.
What about iPhones? Is that something that you've picked up on and use?
No, we don't have a mobile even. Yui Gang has a mobile, yeah.
We don't.
So you just have your landline at home?
Yes.
An answer machine?
Yeah.
Old school.
We don't need more, really.
Yeah. We were talking about
memory. If we needed it, we would do it.
Yeah, of course.
We would learn that.
We were talking about memory earlier, and I feel like with you guys, you retain so much because you're such creatures of habit, because you've kept the same routine for so long that in some ways everything is kind of easily remembered because of that. Does that make sense?
We believe in order, yeah.
Yeah. So during...
Simplicity and order, that's our motto. It's so simple arranged, right? Because we design all the catalogs are designed by us. But we are done in so... And all the designs of the installations are all designed by us. We make models and all the stuff. But it's all simple. Once we go near to other people, that's so complicated.
Once you let something out of your hand, there's no end to what can go... wrong and
yeah.
I love that precision though, and that kind of like dedication. Because I've heard you just
used
describe...
to be a waiter. That's why.
Oh, really?
but you used to be a waiter.
But I heard that idea of like solitary kind of, you know, being solitary can lead to freedom.
Oh, it's
of course.
Yes,
of course.
I love that though. It's so true. But I think people forget it.
So what has it been like this period then, as creatures of habit? Because there's a restaurant that you eat in. Every night, the same restaurant in Dalston you go to, and you have lunch at a certain place and breakfast at a certain place. What's been going on with the lockdown and COVID, and that's effectively...
It's making me sad for our places. We can't.
Oh. But how has that changed you both? How has that
not
affected
really.
The work?
And I think
horrible. You have to go to shops. Once this thing is over, I never want to set foot in a shop again.
Well, you don't have a kitchen at home, either,
no,
do you?
No, but we never...
That's why we have to go shopping now. And there are crumbs in the studio. We never have breadcrumbs in the studio. It's disgusting.
We only...
Washing dishes.
We only used to have instant coffee and milk. That's it.
So what are you still doing that now?
That we still have.
We still do that, but now we have Yui Gang who is buying for us, and we do it as well. But mostly we are on bread and water.
So bread, bread and water. Bread and ham and cheese.
And that's what you're living on?
Yes.
Anything is simple.
Do you do like take like Uber Eats? Do you
No. No, it's very funny because at the beginning of the lockdown, we asked our restaurant to send some dishes, but then they closed down. And we made two artworks after that.
Beautiful.
George, tell it.
Very beautiful. Because we realized how beautiful the television screen-shaped lids of the takeaway boxes.
Yeah.
They're this very distinctive shape, aren't they? And the boys, of which we are very fond and big friends of us, wrote little messages on them for us. So we use those in the picture. Fantastic.
And what did they say?
Baby. One says onion salad by baby, because we always called him baby. And he signs it baby. All those... It's amazing locked memory of a time of... Extraordinary.
It's quite exciting because restaurants are very same. Once we like one, we stay there until they close down, finish. The most famous, the Market Cafe, that we went there 30 years until they closed down. And we went there twice a day.
Where the market traders went, at Spitalfields.
Yes. Yeah. Lunch, breakfast and lunch all the time. And we became, for us, they were the greatest people we ever met, the two. Clyde and Phyllis, just extraordinary, magic, totally. Self-taught, working like what they call for free, for nothing.
Extraordinary.
And we, at the beginning, when we started to go into the market cafe, we were not allowed in. The market porter tried to chuck us out all the time. So we were just allowed to sit inside the door for a year, maybe. But we went there 20 or 30 years after that. And we actually, Tower Hamlet always tried to lock close them down because somebody else wanted to buy the restaurant. And we fought for that non-stop. And we actually went in and they wanted more toilets. We redid it. We helped him doing the toilet. We did the roof. We painted it all up. They make it all normal again. It was just fantastic. Mm.
Did they save a table for you? Do all these restaurants save tables for you?
No, the Cockneys were very aggressive at that time. Horrific.
Even though you were loyal.
There were many restaurants, cafes you couldn't go to at that time.
And what is there now?
You know the big wholesale market there, when it was the fruit and veg market, Spitalfields Market?
Yeah.
You could look right through from front to back and the side. It was big, and we always could see these huge mountains of orange boxes and things. We always wanted to walk through, yeah? You would see all the traders going through and the trolleys going through. So it would be nice to go. But the minute you set one foot, you say, fuck yeah, okay. Just appalling tribalism. Really, really, so aggressive.
Now we have fantastic.
Cockneys have all... I mean, those same people now that sort of 50 years later, they've had a heart attack and side of their faces collapsed and they see and say, oh, good old days, wasn't it? All the news coming to cafe and the market and all that.
Totally forgotten it.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we always had fantastic. Then we had this amazing Korean restaurant in Highbury, Islington, where we used to see Boris Johnson every night.
Oh. Before he was Boris. Before he was the mayor.
Prime Minister.
He went in for a takeaway every night.
1990, I think it was.
He stood out because he used to bring his bicycle into the restaurant and put it flat on the floor.
Put it flat on the floor.
Yeah, like
kids to step like over
kids.
It.
Yeah, like kids do outside of shops now. Have you noticed that?
Chucking down, you know.
So it's a teenage thing.
People just had to step over it if they want it.
Yeah. And
a year later, it turned out to be the mayor of London.
There you go.
We used to see him many times bicycling, what they call near Shoreditch, up to Islington. Mm-hmm. And he used to shout, "Hello, Gilbert! Hello, George!"
Not that we ever met him, but
he'd say hello.
He was a great supporter. Yeah. I think he deserves all the help and support he can have. What a nightmare job, the dear man. Extraordinary.
For the photograph...
He managed to be the mayor of London, not the Tory mayor of London. He was the mayor of London. Mm-hmm. He's very good. Mm-hmm. He got Brexit done.
We got the bikes, didn't he? The Boris bikes.
The bikes, yes.
For the works downstairs in the show, when we see you in them, you have these very direct stares, and there you are, like the artist is present in that moment, you know, with the viewer.
The super tramps, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But are you actually in those locations, or are the photos of you
taken? No, they are the real locations.
They are, so you are actually in those
Locations. But they're always two images, but blended together.
I take George, George take
oh,
me.
Oh, that's how you do it. So you're never posing together. They're always a separate...
Yeah. I take George, George take me.
See, because we were trying to work it out earlier. Yes. We were but like, we the are, practicality behind it, we needed to understand.
But we are so clever, anymore. You wouldn't see.
You are clever. Hey. You are clever. When did you
I
start...
I think you thought we were a bit daft or something.
When did you start wearing the suits, and how many suits have you got, and why have we not had the V&A Gilbert and George show yet?
We need a V&A show, seriously.
We need some new suits. They're wearing out.
It started out because when we went to see all these galleries, no, we had to dress up.
That's your manifesto.
Yeah, dress up. No? Yeah. The suits, no? I only had one suit. You had one that...
Yeah.
The ones that you bought around the corner for £20 or something.
Yes, I had a very good second-hand suit.
Yes, that's why you started off. And then it became an amazing image.
It became an amazing classless thing. You can go anywhere in the world and people respect it.
You said they wouldn't search for airports.
You hardly ever search for it. Yeah. Yeah, you get a restaurant table in any restaurant in the world with a suit.
And
we went 1 year to Lisbon, and they said the best restaurant is this super posh one near there. So we went there, and we were totally unnoticed, not because they knew us. And at the door, there's a very grand head waiter. Uh-huh. And he said, do you have a table for? And he just said, we always have a table for great artists this way, gentlemen.
That wow. was in Malta, I remember Malta, that. Malta. And
not, what not because... We had an exhibition there or anything.
It's very funny. And another time, we had a show in Monte Carlo, no? And we stayed in a grand hotel, no? And all these rich people all dressed up in jeans, no? But we were with you, no? So they all thought we were working in the hotel.
We were management. We were always waiting in the morning for Huey Gang to come from his hotel, and yeah. people come and ask for the bar. And I always gave them the wrong directions.
I'm obsessed with the colours that you've used in these new photos yeah. for the suits. I said to Russ, like, if you had your own suit line, those gregarious, bright, vibrant colours, I would be all over it.
I'm terrified it looked sometimes too much like Michael Portillo, don't you think?
I think they're extraordinary.
Have you ever considered releasing, like, your own line of Gilbert and George suits that off the peg people could buy?
We never do that stuff.
People can do stuff like that if they want.
They're allowed to do whatever they want. Images and all that. That's all free. Never.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So you don't copyright every image?
No.
We all try to think it's very simple.
Democratic.
Because only the one picture that we sign, that's a real piece, and that's about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
We kept to that.
I love how inclusive you are as well for like every sort of audience member. Like you can come even to this White Cube show and buy a poster
that's
signed by you in such a beautiful way.
Very important.
And so many of my friends have them in their homes all around the world, you know, these signed posters by you. And they're beautifully made. Is that something that's important?
It's incredibly important that. Because 99% of the people who stop us in the street here or in other countries who say, I love your art. Yeah? And we say, which exhibit? Oh, I haven't. None of them have been to an exhibition.
Yeah.
Mm. It gets through somehow or other.
Yeah. And
that's the other good story about, like, the Lisbon, the recognition story. We had to go for a... It wasn't for a show, but we were in Amsterdam one day to do with the buying a picture or something. Anyway, and we had the afternoon free, so we just wandered around Amsterdam. And we did wander down the street where the sex shows are. Yeah,
of course.
And you all have the touts outside. Yeah? I don't think they have them now, but this is 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they all would say, live fucky-fucky show starts, only 12 Gilbert starts in 5 minutes. Live fucky-fucky show starts. Morning, Gilbert, morning, George. Live fucky-fucky show starts in 5 minutes, only 12 Gilders. What a magic moment. What a magic moment.
Made it.
Do you know anything?
Made it.
Even, well, it's quite exciting.
Didn't bat an eyelid. He'd never been to an exhibition, right?
I just knew you were.
But you know that in Holland, we did this interview with Theo van Gogh, the one who was killed. You don't remember that? Very famous in Holland.
The only living male descendant of van Gogh was a very famous...
Theo, the brother of...
Theo.
His brother.
The son of one brother or something, or sister, I don't know.
Because he's Theo's brother, Theo. Isn't he? So it must have been Theo's son.
It's probably grandson.
Grandson.
Yeah. Anyway, he was murdered. And he did a big interview with us, and they did an opera out of it.
Really?
It's called The Naked Shit Songs.
What's it called?
The Naked Shit Songs.
Naked Shit Songs, yeah.
It's a very beautiful opera, extraordinary. Yeah.
Wow.
You can see it online. It's a film of it somewhere. Yeah.
So as artists that were courting fame, wanting fame, desiring.
We never use that. We wouldn't think of it as fame.
Did you want to be famous artists? Mm.
Yeah. In the beginning.
Yeah. But now you are, like you're saying, people know who you are. What does success and fame feel like to Gilbert and George?
Next thing.
Not enough.
Next thing, not enough.
Never enough.
Never enough.
No.
Onto the
but
next.
Do you feel satisfaction, though, the fact that you are now so, and I know you hate the term national treasures, but now that you have that sort of level of recognition and respect and acknowledgement and excitement, does that feel satisfying?
It doesn't feel like that, because we always have the anti and pro and anti non-stop going on. And the changes all the time. We don't look at these old codgers anymore. Stuff like that non-stop going on.
So you're battling that.
We still have the enemy.
Who is the enemy?
It's still there.
They're all changing all the time.
They're all around.
Who is it now?
There are some young, what do you call...
Even our Austrian dealer, who looks after Paris for us as well, today's Rupak, he opened a space in London.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's a very successful Austrian person, because Austrian people didn't become that successful like today's, right? Having a gallery in...
Global.
Even in New York, he wants to open things. And he knows all the high society in Austria and things. Very small world. So he knows the lady who married Prince Michael, for instance, right? So because of that connection, Prince Michael has a sort of casual interest in Tadeusz, and they meet once or twice a year or something because of London and everything. So one day they meet, and Prince Michael says, how's everything at the gallery, young man? Yeah. And today, so it was doing very well, very pleased. We're opening another branch, and as a matter of fact, I'm opening an exhibition of Gilbert and George next week. And Prince Michael says, oh no, not those two. So they are there.
And we have another story about Dennis Thatcher.
Why would they say that?
We have another story of Dennis Thatcher that somebody sent us a book with the inside.
It's the last volume of Thatcher.
I don't know exactly where it came from. Anyways,
the scene is Margaret Thatcher sitting on the sofa
somebody must have been guest for her to invite artists as well. No? And so Dennis Thatcher saw this list. And what did he say?
Oh, no, not those two.
Right, okay. So it's kind of like the
elite. It's still working in a way.
It's the elite.
We think even with those people it's working. Yeah. We have spoken to the
exactly
people.
Exactly, for them to not want you means that you've created
reaction. Yeah. We've reached them.
But also,
it's
the cool thing is
stomping out
the work will continue that role forever. That's what's so cool is that what I love about art.
It's quite extraordinary, even the story about the Royal Academy, because they tried to make us Royal Academies for years and years and years. They always wanted, and we never wanted. Even the telephoners, what's her name, Norman Rosenthal and Philip King even telephoned us, and David Hawkins telephoned, they wanted to go into, we didn't want it. And one day we decided, yes, maybe we could do a big show there.
They convinced us,
They convinced us.
Because they said they want to be modernised. We said, but you're old-fashioned. I said, I went to art school in Devon. Not one art school teacher ever set foot in the Royal Academy. Mm. I went to art school in Oxford. Not one teacher ever went to the Royal Academy. Mm. Never put up a picture there. Mm. Went to St Martin. Nobody... It's an old-fashioned thing. Oh, but we want to change. We want to be modern. We need help like people like you. You know, you're trendy and everything. And every time we tried to help, they thought... Anyway, three or four occasions that they wanted something. And the minute then they say no. And the same thing with now. They courted us like mad. And when you give in and say, OK, well, then they... Down comes the portcullis, yeah?
They just want to know that you fancy them.
And,
and
only that, it was a unanimous decision not to do the show of us. That's quite extraordinary.
For who? What?
Unanimous decision not to do the show.
Mm. If the show was dated, that's the most extraordinary thing. And then they said, "Oh, but it'll just have to go through the committee. It's a formality. It's just a rubber stamp, you know." Mm. And so we said, "It's fine then." And then, to their amazement, the committee all said no. Oh, yeah. So we think it's something they've done. Everyone thinks that they've done something bad to us. They've done something to themselves as well. Mm.
But we will have another big show somewhere here. We know that. Mm.
You know, it's interesting on the opposite side of that is that there's so many artists I know that are really inspired by you, including our mutual friend Oliver Hemsley.
Yes.
Who is the reason when I did the intro and I mentioned the shit being in your work, that was in my consciousness right now because Oliver, we did an interview with him recently about his work, and he said that walking into a museum when he was about 15 or something, he saw one of your photos that had shit in it.
Flying piss
or, you know, whatever it is.
It was
flying shit. That's right.
It was in the South London Gallery. Yes. Flying shit pictures.
So he saw the flying shit pictures and it made him, it sort of shook him in his, you know, soul to kind of think, wow, this is possible, and almost gave him permission to think about and perceive what art could be in a different way.
It could be anything.
And yeah, and it could be anything. So how important is that for you? And can you speak a bit about your friendship with Oliver as well?
How did it happen? He came to see us.
Came to see us, and we were, and we still are very, very shocked because the idea of teenage gay bashing Muslims is just the worst thing in the world. Yeah?
They all moved back to.
And then the police managed to find out the name of the three boys, but at that point they were on a mid flight to Bangladesh, mm-hmm. where they'd be given a medal for gay bashing, not
probably
be returned to the British. Mm. Right. What a nightmare.
And he came
that still is there. Yeah.
He came to see us and he was talking about what you call trying to arrange a
he wanted to not be angry and furious about it all. So he started this charity, Art Against Knives,
young people and stuff.
And that didn't work out very well because he smacked in the building that he organized for them, yeah. And Gilbert said, forget their charity. Just
do your art, no?
Yeah. And don't feel good or bad about what happened. Don't neither, just and, nil.
And then we got, it was a year ago, he did a small show in Highgate somewhere. Mm-hmm. We went up there. Oh, we loved them. Mm. I thought there were extraordinary pictures of himself. Mm. How he feels without half a body, just extraordinary. We bought a picture and then he gave us, and then he moved outside London. And he had a new studio there, and he started to do this. Why did he make them so big? Because he did them like that, horizontal, but they arranged put vertical because he cannot stand up anymore. So he did them vertical.
He misses being a tall man.
And so they look extraordinary to me. Yeah. It's so personal, so extraordinary. He himself, you know. I think we would like to show one day of him.
Amazing spirit.
Yes, please. Because your connection to younger artists feels so important that you've always been very open and very
only certain artists
yeah, but it feels like they've been really fundamental to their practice. And there's someone else that we touched on earlier is David Robilliard, who for me is an absolute hero, who was an artist who died in 1988 of AIDS complications when he was 36, which felt like he was on the crest of a wave of greatness, and you guys were dear friends of him and supported him and his partner Andrew Heard, who died a few years later. Can you talk a bit about him?
We never had better friends.
I mean, Andrew Heard, he was a waiter at the Blitz. He came to out here and said,
it's a very good.
What did he say?
He said it's a little bit embarrassing because I'm serving here and I'm studying you at college. May I present you with a bottle of Cote de Rhône? And he put it on the table. But then he went away. It wasn't open. We couldn't even drink the bloody stuff. Yeah?
And then
he was so embarrassed. Yeah?
And then he introduced us to David Robilliard. There must have been in 79, I think, already.
At the Hayward Gallery
when we had a big show there. It was a group show. Yeah. Being part of the group. And then we went all back to the Blitz Hotel and the Blitz restaurant, and then he behaved extraordinarily, you know. And that was it.
David was so bad to behave.
Like what?
To turn your head and the bum was in your face and stuff like that.
He used to say to, especially girls at the table, look who's come in. And when the girl would be fascinated, he would very quickly pee in their glass of wine. Yeah?
Oh, my God.
Non-stop stuff like that. But it is exactly like what was the film on Channel 4 now they had? What was it?
It's a sin.
It's a sin. That's the Rubiliard story. Totally.
That's the Rubiliard story. Yeah.
He came from an island and
he's
Richie
Tozer. He's the lead boy in it. Totally.
Yes, and then he became a worker, what they call, and then we made him do poetry, and we did the first.
He came to
Guernsey.
And you guys published his first poetry book.
And even drawings, we made him do drawings and all of that. And yeah, then we bought the canvases.
He did it all, but in bits of paper in his pocket. And we said, it's not good enough just like that. Yeah, they're fantastic. They used to do the drawings of people in nightclubs, just a little head, just exactly. You knew exactly that person, just perfect. We said, do it as a work of art. And then he got cracking. He was extraordinary.
And he and you guys all hung around together and...
Non-stop, we were his...
He used to come... Up until recently, if anyone by chance knocked on the door on a Friday night, that's when he used to come. We used to go up to a different Turkish one. We'd have dinner, and then he would run. He would run to the bell for the rest of the night, yeah?
And he was very good in finding models for us. It was a period in 19...
He loved doing that.
In 87 or something, he came...
Not that he needed an excuse to chat up young people, but it gave him an added excuse to chat up.
So we had a little book that we paid them £50 or £60 for a model a session. No? And he used to come one after another. No? It's extraordinary. And they all... Their dress was Mickey Mouse all the time.
They never signed properly, right? Because
he was incredibly handsome as well, right?
He was lovely looking. Yes. Lovely looking.
But he was another total outsider.
Yeah.
Self-taught.
Yeah.
Poetry, all self-taught, rejected by the family because they were Jehovah's Witnesses.
They were religious, yeah. Well, I think his family, his sisters, and even they're high up in the church there, I think. And the
parents came to see him, but we saw him die, but not them, because they were at the hotel.
They're at the hotel. I didn't go and see.
We fixed. David wanted to see his mummy, because he knew he was going, and they weren't coming. So we had to arrange for them to come, and we arranged a hotel just near the hospital, because we knew they were country people and they wouldn't know. So it was within 20 yards of the, and they didn't like the hotel. It turns out, and they went to a sort of Guernsey hotel in the suburbs, which meant they weren't when he died at all. In fact. Yeah. Horrific.
What hospital was that?
The one they demolished. Where was it? Near.
What's it called? The pink. Pink. Near. It's still there. It's the big modern one next to it now.
Right.
Near Euston.
No, not near Euston. It was.
Was it an eight? Yeah, because the wing. Or that?
The room was. Yeah. Oh, the middle set. No. It wasn't. No, it was in the one off Tottenham Court Road. Is it called the Middlesex?
Yeah, maybe it's Middlesex.
No, the one that demolished.
That was the one that had the AIDS wing, that had the AIDS.
Yes, that's it.
He moved 2 or 3 times, I think.
But he was in that one as well, but not when he died.
And the extraordinary thing that when Andrew Herr died, we were roughly the only people there and the boyfriend then.
Wow.
He did not accept AIDS. That's it.
Sure, Andrew died of shame more than of nearly, yeah. He just couldn't believe that he'd contracted it.
I mean, that must
he said to the doctor again, there must be some mistake. Could you have another test? I'm sure I don't have it. Yeah.
But he never mentioned the word, but David Rubiliard always mentioned that.
Rubiliards, he introduced himself as it. He took it claiming.
When he came to our openings, he went around to everybody. I've got AIDS, you know? I've got AIDS.
And we did an amazing picture of him with the sweating arms and AD.
Oh, I've not seen that.
AD as in Anno Domini, but as in... AIDS David.
AIDS David, it's called.
It's just a big sweating picture. He had the sweat.
It's an extraordinary picture, that one.
Do I mean, that time, though, that you lived through as like a queer couple, you must have experienced so much of the AIDS epidemic around you. You must have.
It was a nightmare. It was years before I thought that I probably didn't have it, yeah.
So you never got tested? You was like one of the people,
we knew.
We're not going to do it.
Nobody we knew got tested, unless you got ill or something. Yeah?
And we did the AIDS pictures, one whole show.
Yes.
Maybe it was,
I've seen those. Okay.
Was £500,000.
But David lives on in some strange way. He has a cult following in North America, a little bit in Europe.
And that's right.
He's always popping up.
Russell actually has a work in his flat that I saw today. So I was thinking about his work.
I'm trying to do something with him. I've got stuff out at the minute, pitching to bring back, just to get his poetry out, just to get that read, because it's so timeless, so contemporary, and especially now, and especially
in your face, in a fantastic way. No other. I never like poetry, but when I read his, I love it.
I love it.
It's up to date. It's like our pictures.
Timeless as well. Yeah.
It's like our pictures. Opening the door, no? And yes, it was quite extraordinary. But we have a lot of his drawings that he gave us.
Mm.
Not paintings, but little drawings, quite a lot. But because even his booklets, all the what they call the address, was 12 Fulton Street in the back.
It was your address, wasn't it?
If found, because he never had a proper place where he lived, not really, because he knew it would come back to him.
He was the only person who was allowed in whenever he wanted.
We have a work downstairs called Garden Walk, and that's where his studio was. Him and Andrew shared the studio. Garden Walk.
The last.
Garden Walk. Yeah. And I sometimes go and stand outside there on a dog walk and just imagine.
The building's still there. Yeah.
The building's still there. And I just imagine, I don't know what floor he was on. Do you know what floor? Second floor.
First floor.
He was on the first floor. Great, but that helps me out visualize it, because I stand outside and I imagine that life lived and what that was. And I'm connected to him because I feel like it could have been me. Feels like he was me.
Mm. It was such a struggle.
There was a huge safe there, a huge safe, like a big wardrobe, which they wanted to open, and then they got a locksmith, and he couldn't open it, and then they got a special one, and it was never opened. It's probably still unopened there, yeah.
But it was an amazing struggle. Unbelievable.
It's sad.
But that is life.
That is life. Well, we ask every guests that come on the same two questions at the end. And the first one is,
if you could do an art heist and we will help you, so you could like go to a museum or a gallery or someone's home around the world, anywhere, and take home an artwork, which artwork would you steal?
And why?
And why? And it could be anything. It could be a sculpture or a building or anything you want, any size.
That's incredibly difficult. We don't belong to the gallery going class. We like to very snobbishly say,
maybe we would take home the arrows of Piccadilly Circus.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's good.
Love that.
Yes.
The Eros.
Why the Eros?
And he's a famous carpenter.
He's pointing in a certain direction, isn't he, on purpose? Isn't there a reason why he's pointing down towards the water?
The arrow, yeah. It's quite interesting. It's dedicated to Lord Shaftesbury, that nobody knows that, yeah, who stopped children working in factories. And there he is with teenagers running around looking for work.
Yeah.
I forgot who did it. That was a favour.
The sculptor is... It escapes me for a moment, the sculptor. The sculptor is very important as well.
Yes, very good one.
We did a picture with that in called Love. Because love is associated in some particular or strange or whatever way with Piccadilly, historically. Yeah?
Right.
Well, it's like the arrow. Who's the god who has the arrow of love with a heart in the end?
Cupid.
Eros is quite similar to Cupid.
Yeah.
Because we love all these Edwardian sculptures in the city. They're our favourite. No? These Edwardian, we like in general Edwardian London. No?
Yeah.
Because they must have been so rich that this is extraordinary buildings. I mean, we are the biggest collectors of 19th century vases, furniture, fabrics, and all that stuff.
Where do you find them? Where do you go shopping for your antiques?
Not so much anymore. Mm. We used to go to special dealers, and we became very close friends of them, because there are so few who are interested in this kind of subject. Mm. And we became fascinated because they were not loved.
Mm. They were discriminated against.
Mm. This period of history.
Oh, yes.
Still is in certain.
Why? What? Because they were just
saying... It's a horrible Victorian. Yeah.
Right, snobbery.
This repressive people. It's all a big misunderstanding. They were all giants, in fact, they were. Giants. World giants. And what was the second question?
What is your favourite colour? What is your favourite colour?
Oh, it had to be red, no. We used it more than any other colour, yes.
Because it's good for danger, love, blood.
It was the first colour that we used, red.
It's a very strange story, because we used to go to have the films developed in a little place, And on the shelf, there were little tiny bottles. And we said, what are the bottles? They said, they're colours. We said, what do you need colours for? They said, when we develop colour films, there's little spots and we have to touch them out.
Wow.
And so we thought, is there a colour that's in? Red was good. So we said, but how can we get a large quantity of that? And they gave us the name of the person who made it. He made it in his garage in the suburbs, this colour, and bottled it up. Because the people who buy those little bottles only buy it once every 50 years, right? Mm. It's a tiny pinprick of each colour they need. Yeah?
Then for 5 years, we only used red. In 1980, we chose red, green, and blue, and yellow.
Mm. We had to find colour because we didn't start off like a child starts off with a box of crayons, or an artist starts off with a box of all the paints, right? We didn't start with that.
I like the fact you're unified. You both said red. It's like you think as one.
first colour.
It was the first colour.
First colour. Yeah. Took us 5 years to find any other colour.
Wow. All the red, all the mental beads, the red morning pieces, the, what do you call, and even the dirty words.
Dirty words.
They have only colour in it.
Black and white and red, black and white and red.
Mm-hmm. What's a secret of East London that only Gilbert and George know that we should all now discover?
No idea.
I wouldn't know that.
Well, like you've said about like Oscar Wilde, where he bought the opium and stuff like that. Are there like these hidden...
Oh, you want to know that one? No, yeah. I'll tell you that one.
It's long gone. It's gone now. But are there any hidden like places where you know an event happened that we might not know or we can like make a pilgrimage to or...
No, I would know it.
There's one dodgy, naughty club which is still open despite all of the... But I'm not going to give you that number. You probably know which it is anyway, no?
No.
Oh.
What happens there?
The same as normal.
Oh, like a sex club.
Oh, a sex club? And that's still open?
It's not called that, but...
Okay, that's been throughout the lockdown, that's still been open for business. Very nice. No. Well, you can find that.
On that happy note.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this has
it's been so wonderful
amazing.
Spending time with you.
And,
for everyone listening now, you must head over to White Cube in Mason's Yard in central London. It's just very close to Green Park, obviously. And see New Normal Pictures, which is running...
The 1st of May, but they open, I think it will be open the 12th of April.
It's open online now.
But online at the moment, all our pictures about... You can come in the 12th of April.
Amazing. So from the 12th of April.
And cheap catalogues. That's very important.
And the amazing posters
and
as well.
Signed posters.
Love.
Yeah.
And we will be posting images of every artwork we've spoken about on our Instagram.
Yes.
And
you guys aren't on Instagram, are you? No. Not, you don't have someone running the Instagram for you?
No.
But at White Cube is on Instagram, so you can check that to see more details.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
You
it's
so
been
much.
Such a privilege to spend time with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
I'm crying now.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds, like the breathable, silky smooth tree dasher, the responsive foam and extra grip of the tree runner, or the classic low-top look of the tree piper. Allbirds has a lightweight, ultra-packable shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.